Minnesota Twins are going to retire Jim Cott's number. Gentlemen, I think they should do it in Jim Cott fashion and do it really fast. Like run out there, you know, retire the number and have everybody run back to the dugout just the way Jim would want it.
You know, he's probably pitched games faster than the ceremony to retire his number will take that day. Was it July 16th, something like that?
No doubt about it. So this is Chin Music. This is part of the TalkNorth.com podcast network. We're doing it remotely this week. So you might hear a few gaps as we wait for each other to speak. That's just the world we live in right now. But we will be back live with you, hopefully, 6 p.m. Tuesday, January 18th at Pizza Luce in Eden Prairie at 6 o'clock. Tuesday, January 18th at Pizza Luce in Eden Prairie. Come out, have some pizza, have a drink, enjoy the show. Roy might bring his bat and do another hitting demonstration. It's a lot of fun. We do appreciate Pizza Luce sponsoring the program, hosting the show, and it's great to get together with everybody, even in these difficult times. All right, gentlemen, so the negotiations resumed this week between the players and the owners. They got nowhere, predictably, and we're really not very far away from spring training being pushed back and maybe spring training being pushed back far enough that it affects the regular season. What is your level of optimism that something gets done before the season is affected? Let's start with Roy.
I don't have a large degree of optimism that they're going to have a normal spring training. I think they will be locked out of spring training to start with. That's my fear, and I think is the highest probability. And then whatever that does to the regular season, whether they speed up, you know, truncate spring training a little bit, or whether they just start the season late and negotiate some kind of doubleheader schedule, or, you know, I don't know. But I, at this point, it just seems so ludicrous to me, you know, so counterproductive to have started this already. I don't see it. And just based on, maybe things are different now. If this had happened in the 13 years that I was in the big leagues, or, and it did, by the way, you know, for the next 5 or 10 years after I retired, there's no way spring training starts on time. So, you know, maybe I'm just being overly influenced by my personal experience. Maybe it's different now, but it doesn't feel like it to me.
Yeah, I'm not optimistic right now. Just because of the what we've heard about the differences in what the players want and what the owners are willing to give up. I mean, the players want one less year of arbitration and they want to become a free agent 1 year earlier. You know, that's a monumental jump. I'm guessing though the owners are thinking. The minimum salary should go up. I agree with that. I wouldn't mind seeing it go up to $800,000-$900,000 a year. And they want some other things too in terms of revenue because their butt hurt over the last negotiation. So it's disappointing that it hasn't been more frequency of talks here. And we're at a weird spot now because you guys know, like right now, pitchers are throwing. I mean, pitchers are starting their progression to being ready for spring training. But they don't know at what effort level they should be at right now, because they don't know what time the first workout is scheduled for. And are they working on a early April opener? Are they working on a mid-April opener or a late April opener? No one knows. So the whole baseball world has stopped spinning right now, waiting for the millionaires to bicker with the billionaires and find a solution here. And, you know, everybody loses in the end. The players lose. Minnesotans lose in particular because I think a lot of Minnesotans try to flee this area during the winter to get down to Fort Myers and watch some games and work on their tan, but he can't do that either. Star Tribune loses because we don't even have a place to stay during a spring training gym. We usually rent a house every year, but we're on hold until we find out when we can go down to cover some camp. So it stinks right now.
But you're America's guest, LaBelle. I mean, somebody will take you in. Nobody's going to take me in. So it's really a me problem, not a you problem.
So $800,000 or $900,000 minimum salary. May I tell my first paycheck in the big league story?
Yes, please.
So it's 1975, and I get called up to the Texas Rangers, and I'm going to get paid at the rate of the major league minimum, which that year was $16,000 a year. And I'm 22 years old, and I played there. I played for 2 weeks, and I got a paycheck, prorated out, you know, by the however many weeks that is, 24 weeks of the season. So I got one-twelfth of the rate for the season. And I'll never forget opening up my paycheck and looking at it, and it said, and I got paid after tax $832.16. And I had two thoughts. I remember, I mean, I had achieved my goal, my first goal of getting to the big leagues. I'd been there 2 weeks. I'm 22 years old. I'm single. I've already got my apartment paid for in Texas for that month. And I get this check, and it's $832.16. And I had two thoughts. My first thought was, what am I going to do with all this money?
Yep.
And my second thought was, holy shit, in 2 weeks, I get another one.
That's amazing. It's America, baby.
Well, your first paycheck was when gas was still like 45 cents a gallon, though, right?
Hey, let me tell you, back, if we reverse back inflation, the inflation of today, it was still not a lot of money. It wasn't $800,000 or $900,000. Let me just tell you that. I don't care what inflation has been. It ain't that much.
Reminds me of my first job in the profession. I was working at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, basically typing in box scores. I was making $6 an hour, no benefits, and I couldn't wait for the paper paycheck to come out on Friday afternoon. I would grab it. I would go straight to Whataburger, and I thought I was in heaven because I could get a Whataburger and a Coke, and that was my big meal for the week.
Oh, that's hilarious. My first year in pro ball in AA, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. When we went on the road, we got $6 a day in meal money. And I remember my one of the guys, that my double play partner, as a matter of fact, a second baseman on the team, we went on our first road trip, and he said, man, $6 a day meal money. I led the league last year in Mama Burgers at A&W.
Oh, man. Golly.
So this is our baseball show at TalkNorth.com. Thank you for listening to the network. Best way to listen, subscribe at your favorite podcast app. You can always go to TalkNorth.com. If you like the show, you might also like some of the other stories we tell over time. You can find the archives. You can check out our sponsors. You can check out all the other great sports shows. We do have the best sports lineup in Minnesota. We have tons of good outdoor content. We have variety shows, and we continue to add to the network. And we get to do all that because you listen. We do appreciate it. You're listening to Roy Smalley, former Twins star, current Twins broadcaster. Lavelle Neal III, former Twins beat writer, now Star Tribune columnist. I'm Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune. Our producer is Brandon Morton. And I recommend following us on Twitter at Talk North Pod. You'll see all of the shows as they are released. You also get the live dates and everything else. Thanks to our sponsors, 11 Wells Distillery, Memorial Blood Center. They do really important work. Better Edge, Pizza Luce, and we'll tell you more about our sponsors here in a minute. Some interesting international news, especially for me, because I got to go to Tokyo and watch the USA baseball team get silver, which it was really entertaining baseball. Tyler Austin, the former Twin and former Yankee, has been basically named the Dick Case Award winner, which basically kind of their Team USA, USA Baseball Player of the Year. Also, Michael Kadire, I think a friend of all of ours, the Coach Educator of the Year. I think that is such a quintessential Kadire kind of award, because Kadire has always, ever since the first minute I met him, he has always been a great guy. He has always been someone who is very inclusive, who wants to help people. I think it's so cool that Kadire wins Coach Educator of the Year for USA Baseball. Lavelle, why don't you go first this time?
You know, that is pure Cuddy. And I saw that announcement and I was like, of course he won, you know, because he's always been incredibly knowledgeable about the game and able to articulate the game, and always had interest in teaching the game to younger players. And the thing about Kadire is that he understands how the game should be played, and he makes that point when he's dealing with other players. I remember having a conversation with him during one spring training when he was coming down as a special instructor, and he was telling me how much he dislikes these showcase tournaments where teams show up and all these top players show up, and it's all about trying to hit 450 foot home runs or max delivery, throwing, you know, as hard as you can in the upper 90s, showing how flashy you are defensively. They're not playing baseball, you know, they're just showing off with skills. They're not trying to win games. They're not trying to make winning plays. They're not trying to move runners over. They're not trying to, you know, hit the cutoff man. They're trying to show off how big of an arm they have, you know. And so he's a protector of the fundamentals of the sport, and I think he will be a good influence on younger players coming up.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to add to that, because it's all true in my experience with Michael. Very thoughtful, very intelligent baseball player, high baseball IQ, always interested in learning more about it, trying to figure it out, and very thoughtful about the way he approached all of his baseball education and intelligence. Terrific guy to everybody. My impression was always that, in just kind of watching from, you know, I won't say afar, because I've been, you know, around, but I, you know, I'm not best friends with any of the guys in the club, but just you know, hanging around and talking to guys and watching from, you know, a few feet removed. I think what you see with Cuddy is what you get, and I think it's always been that way, and probably most assuredly it always will be that way.
And Kadire was always great to me. He was great to everybody. That was the cool thing about Michael. I did have a favorite, and he probably wouldn't want me to share this, but I will anyway. I was standing in the dugout talking to Kadire one day, and Slowey came by, and Slowey, like, and apparently they had had some kind of a disagreement over some analytics based idea. And, you know, Slowey was the guy who not only wanted to talk about analytics, he wanted you to know he was smarter than you were. And he walked by and he like snipped at Kadire, like gave him kind of some shot, like, okay, you know, I'm really going to win this argument. And Kadire basically just told him to shut up and go away. And that's my, you know, I already loved Kadire, but that really made him a hero to me. Anybody who tells Kevin Slowey to shut up just rises up my list.
Yeah, I think there's a long list of people who wanted to say that to Slowey through the years.
And we won't make Roy a comment on that, but that was one of my favorite Kadire moments. John Lester.
Jim, we got to be careful about that, because Slowey is working for the Players Association right now.
Oh, I know. I know. But there are some bridges you burn and you do not want to rebuild them. And
I will comment on that. In a clubhouse, on a team, there are – oftentimes guys that are like what you describe with Slowey and or other forms of annoyance, personality characteristics and things that they say and all that. And in every good locker room, in every good clubhouse that ends up having good chemistry, there is a veteran or two that tells people that tells those people to shut the F up. And if they don't, then you end up having a bad clubhouse. And that's why it's so important, you know, that the veteran leadership is, you know, is so important in that way. I've been on, you know, a couple of teams with Don Baylor. For example, Baylor would take none of that. Also on the 87 team, that Donnie actually, you know, came and joined us for the month of September in the postseason, thank goodness. But before that, the whole personality of the club was anti-smugness and personal ego and all that kind of stuff. And there's plenty of all of that that goes on. Everybody has a little bit in them, but if it comes out, if it came out in any way, there was somebody, whether it was Herbie or Puck or Gaetti or Bert or me, or, I mean, it was a sarcastic clubhouse, and the sarcasm and the ribbing was in the old expression is it was on the square, right? Yeah, kidding on the square, meaning, you know, it's hitting really, I'm teasing, but it's hitting real close to home. And that's the way that that kind of stuff was taken care of on and is taken care of on most teams. But with our team, it wasn't anybody specifically too often having to go to someone and say, hey, you know, cut it out. It was public. It was public sarcastic denouncement in front of, in some humorous way in front of everybody. And that tends to police itself.
And I still remember stories about Carl Willis, who really a good guy and a big contributor to the 91 team. Still remember stories that, you know, they named him Big Train because they thought he was doing too many interviews or tooting his own horn too much. And all of a sudden he's Big Train for life.
Yeah. Yeah. That will happen. I mean, you end up, you know, the guys end up wearing the shoes that fit oftentimes.
All right, we have a lot to get to. I know it seems like there's not much going on in baseball, but on this show, we always have things to talk about. We can always tell stories, and we will get to current events, and there's some current events I want to get to. But first, we want to thank 11 Wells Distillery. Lavelle, tell us about 11 Wells Distillery.
Well, you guys know I've always been a big fan of the Minnesota 13 whiskey, which is just absolute delicious thing to sip on, and they make a great old fashioned with it at 11 Wells for $10. But they also have seasonal cocktails as well. And I was eyeballing this, and I got to try it the next time I go there. They got a drink called the Galaxy Far, Far Away, and it's not as cold as it's been a week ago. It's still, you know, around 20 degrees right now. It was much colder last week, but this drink has hot apple cider, wheat whiskey, allspice liqueur, and ginger liqueur. And I was like, I gotta get some of that in me. And I will recommend it to you folks as well, because it sounds like the perfect drink to help get you through the wintertime. And that's just one of several drinks that 11 Wells Distillery has to offer, located just east of downtown St. Paul, in the old Hams Brewery location. It's a must visit on the weekends, and it's a great place to hang out and bring some friends and sit down and have a nice conversation. 11 Wells Spirits.
It is a cool space. We also want to thank Memorial Blood Centers doing very important work.
Ever know someone who's needed blood? What about someone who's needed blood once, twice, or even three times a month? For hospital patients who need regular blood transfusions, like some with sickle cell disease, having a blood donor who has similar blood characteristics is critical. That's why we need your generous folks from our local Black community to step up and give blood with Memorial Blood Centers. Learn more or schedule an appointment by calling 1-888-448-3253 or by visiting the website mbc.org. That's mbc.org.
We would also like to thank Better Edge. Great place to place your sports bets, and this is a great time of the year to bet on sports with the NFL playoffs going on.
Combine your love for competition, social, and sports with Better Edge, the sports betting exchange that actually gives back to its bettors. Better Edge is a brand new locally based betting platform meant to connect users and attempt to add some coin to the bank. Completely legal and 100% fun, compete against friends, sports insiders, and yourself with Better Edge in a number of different sports and event competitions. In fact, you can follow me. My username is Sonny Everett on this platform to see what my picks are. Use code CHIN for a free $10 when you sign up by visiting betteredge.com. That's BETTOREdge.com.
Last sponsor note reminder, January 18th, 6 p.m., Tuesday night, Pizza Luce, Eden Prairie. Come out, join us, have a drink. We'd love to see you. We'd love to chat with you. All right, let's get to John Lester's retirement. Roy, why don't you start us off? Boy, what a great pitcher, clutch pitcher, teammate he turned out to be.
Yeah, he was all of those things and you know, did all those things after after beating cancer and he was a good story, a really great story when he first started, came back pitching for Boston after, going through the cancer battle and all that kind of stuff. And the great feel good story became a, man, can this guy pitch? And by all accounts, a great teammate. You're right. He was a clutch pitcher. He was tough when in big games. He was tough all the time. But he didn't lose any at all. If anything, he pitched even better, and the tougher the game was. As I watched him, his whole career, I watched him and said, man, this guy is in absolute control of what he believes he needs to do to win this at bat against this hitter, this inning of this game, this stretch of innings that he's pitching in this game. I mean, he just looked like and pitched like and delivered like he knew what the plan was, and he was absolutely going to deliver that. He was great to watch. I always looked forward to watching a game that John Lester pitched.
You know, there's a phrase with some of these pitchers, a big game pitcher, and like David Cone was like the first time I'd heard, you know, in my baseball viewing and observing career was he was called the big game pitcher in the postseason. But Lester was one of those too for this recent era of the game. Except for a couple times, the deeper the team got into the playoffs, the more the better Lester pitched. I think he was 4-1 with a 1.77 ERA in World Series. So once he got to the biggest stage, he performed the best. And there's something to be said about that. Here's a crazy thing about Lester I read about his retirement. He spent 9 years with the Red Sox. And in those 9 years, he's 1.10-63, which is a 63.6% winning percentage with a 3.64 ERA. Okay. He goes to the Cubs, pitched for the Cubs for 6 years. And I didn't know it was that long, but he went to the Cubs, pitched for 6 years. He was 77-44, which is a 63.6% winning percentage and posted a 3.64 ERA. So it was, it's rather remarkable of the run this guy had.
And not only that, I mean, he pitched in as a left-handed pitcher. He pitched in, Fenway, where the opposing team loads up on right-handed hitters and aims for the wall. And he did, as you say, Lavelle, that kind of success in that ballpark. And then he went to a bandbox in Wrigley and did it again. So I mean, it's just another example. But I'll give you a Gene Mock story about big game pitchers, and this is kind of in reverse. But you'll get the point. Someone asked Gene one time, why Reggie, Reggie Jackson had become Mr. October, and seemed to rise to the occasion when the games were the biggest and the stage was the biggest, and Gene had had Reggie in Anaheim with the Angels, and got to know him really, and really liked him. And someone asked Gene, why is it that Reggie how can he elevate his game like that and on the biggest stages? And Gene said, Reggie's strength is not elevating his game. He doesn't elevate his game. Reggie is Reggie. He just doesn't go backwards. He said he lets the pitcher wilt under the and become less of a pitcher because of the big stage, and Reggie, as normal Reggie, will feast on somebody that is not at his best. And so the flip side of that is there are pitchers that on the mound are like Reggie Jackson that do not diminish their ability to their skill. Their ability to deliver what they need to deliver, and they let the hitters go backwards and on the big stage. And John Lester was one of those guys.
And the greatest example of that in recent baseball history was probably Jeter. Jeter was an excellent player, but what made him a great postseason player is he did exactly the same thing in the postseason against better competition that he did on your average Tuesday night against the Royals.
It's really true, and when you think about why would that be? Part of it is personality and mental toughness, but to go along with that is the whole approach. And I'm just talking about hitting right now. I mean, he also played his normal good shortstop and all that kind of stuff because he was just a good player. He was a good base runner, and he knew how to do things well, and so he just did those things, but. from a hitting standpoint, why was he able to do so well in big games against the tough pitchers and all that? And it's because his normal approach was not trying to do too much. He might hit the ball in the ballpark to left field, but the reason he did that was because he got a hang and break a ball. He was looking to hit a fastball to the opposite gap, and someone hung a breaking ball, and because he wasn't jumping out trying to hit it to left field, just the natural reaction speeded up his bat, and he hit a home run to left field. But for the most part, against the tough pitchers, his whole approach was, you know, I'm not going to worry about fastballs inside. I'm going to get a ball out over the plate, and I'm going to get the barrel of the bat to it, hit it somewhere on the field. And so, therefore, the better pitchers who are trying to hit the outside corner or trying to paint the inside corner or throwing up in the zone or whatever, he just took all that stuff. And because his whole approach, what he does every day, is I'm going to get a ball in the middle of the plate, out over the plate somewhere, and I'm going to hit it. I'm going to get the barrel on it. That's all. And when your normal approach is to simplify things, to eliminate, you know, it's kind of like a golfer who all of a sudden, you know, doesn't hit the ball out of bounds anymore. I mean, if you simplify things as your normal course of events, then when the going gets tough, it doesn't get any more complicated, and you have a better chance of success.
You know, the weird thing is the first time I ever heard about Jorge Polanco was because of John Lester. I was talking to Jake Maurer years ago, and this was like Polanco's first visit to Fort Myers after, you know, signing out of the Dominican Republic. And he was like in some minor league spring training game on one of those backfields at Fort Myers. And John Lester was working his way back from injury. And here's Lester pitching to minor leaguers. And Jake was telling me this story about it because, you know, when Polanco first signed with the Twins, he was homesick. He wasn't comfortable. He was trying to get used to a new country, new culture, you know, away from his folks for the first time. And it wasn't easy for him. But then Polanco gets in a box against Lester and like rockets a double to the opposite field. And that was Jake Maurer was like, that was the first sign that Polanco was going to be a player. And it was because line went off of Lester in some spring training game.
And Roy, I think I remember you saying almost the same thing first time Polanco came to the big leagues. I don't know if it was in Texas or someplace, but you know, here's a kid. And I mean, he had a very similar at bat as he was starting his career.
He walked up his first at bat. They called him all the way up from A-ball because they had an issue in the middle infield. I can't remember. It seems to me like it was at shortstop, and I can't remember who got hurt and who somebody else was. I don't know something. They called him up from A-ball, put him right in the lineup, and down in Texas, I was doing the game on TV I had heard about him, and I thought, I'm anxious to see this young guy. And, you know, I mean, it's a lot to ask of a guy, you know, coming out of A-ball to come up here. And he walks up there, and I think it was the first pitch he saw. It was early in the at-bat. But I think it was the first pitch. He just whistled a line drive down the right field line, hitting left-handed for a triple. And it was like, holy cow. it was kind of like what you're saying about Jeter, Jim. You know what? It's not a ball in the big leagues. It's a fastball middle. I know what to do with that. This is what I do with a fastball middle. And it was like, there was no doubt. There was no tentative. There was no doubt in his mind.
I want to see what he can do being fully healthy for an entire season. And that might be unrealistic. Sure. I know players all get banged up, but it feels like when we see him struggling, it's almost always his foot or his ankle. And you can tell by the way he's swinging, he can't fully support his weight and he kind of just manages. I would love to see him with a solid foundation, with his legs healthy, just see what would happen over a full season.
Well, that second half of last year, it looks like he was on almost everything thrown to him. And, if he could do that for an entire season, he could put up some really nice numbers for a shortstop. Or, I'm sorry, second baseman. I want him to be a shortstop next year, but he's probably going to be second baseman.
And he very well might end up being the shortstop.
I want him to stay right where he is. And I was thinking about him the other day. At second base, he doesn't have one defensive thing to worry about. He can play adequate, you know, better than anybody else that they would have at second base in his sleep. And if he wants to work at it a bit, he could be a Gold Glove caliber second baseman. And he can do that without it putting any stress on him from the offensive standpoint. And we saw what he can do in a situation like that second half of last year when he finally got healthy. I feel the same way. I'm sure we all feel the same way. Just give us at least 1 year of, you know, semi-total health. Let's just see what he can do, because he really never has had that. He had a second half of health last year, and he destroyed the world. So the other thing he's doing, he's getting smarter. I noticed this last year. He hit all different kind of pitches out. You know, hitting the 30 whatever home runs he hit. They weren't just fastballs, middle. He had all kinds of different pitches, and I watched him for a while and thought, yep, he's looking for pitches now. For the first time, he's not just trusting his talent to adjust, look for a fastball and adjust everything else. He's figuring out how pitchers are trying to get him out, or what pitches he's likely to see for strikes the most, and he's sitting on that pitch and he's killing it when he gets it. And That's where the big leap comes, when you've got that kind of talent and you've had some success and you know you can hit, and then you get to being smart about and patient enough and strong enough mentally to say, I might get a fastball, you know, down the middle, but that will be a mistake. He's not trying to do that. What he's going to do is try to get me out with curveballs or whatever. And so I'm looking for that, because he did that for this, you know, second half of the season, and That's a big part of why he was so good. And neither he nor Rudy Hernandez will admit that he's doing that, but he's doing that. I know he is. I just watch his body tempo. I watch how he swings at breaking balls, and he is becoming adept at looking for pitches and hitting them when he gets them.
Good stuff. We have a lot of topics we aren't going to get to today. I'm going to save them for Tuesday night. We basically do a close to an hour at Pizza Luce, and a lot of interesting stuff about the negotiations, about speeding up games, about having a woman manager in the Yankees farm system. We're going to get to for today. Let's get a final thought from Lavelle and from Roy on anything they like. Reminder, we have a great lineup here at TalkNorth.com. We have Cheryl Reeve, Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta, John Krasinski, Jeff Diamond, John Millay. We have the Bar Down Beauties. We have tons of great outdoor content, some other cool shows. We're going to be, we just added Mike Grimm's Gopher Report. It's a great get for us. He's going to be covering all Gopher sports. Of course, the voice of the Gophers is now part of TalkNorth.com. So welcome to Mike. Welcome to our newest producer, Brianne Burdett. And thanks to our sales executive, Karen Cleary. All right, Lavelle, why don't you go first?
Okay, I start with a question. What do Jeff Holly, Jerry Kuzman, Jeff Little, Kurt Wardle, Mark Portugal, Joe Niekro, Steve Shields, Kevin Tapney, Terry Steinbach, Rick Reed, Warren Morris, Joe Nathan, Cleet Thomas, Blaine Boyer, Robbie Grossman, and Tyler Clippert all have in common? They all wore number 36.
Oh, wow, that's pretty good. And Joe Nathan as well.
Yes. So I'm challenging the Twins in my column on Sunday, because I'm congratulating them for retiring Cott's number. But I'm challenging them to have as many former wearers of number 36 on hand as possible for the ceremony.
I like it.
Especially good stuff. I think Nathan probably had the best career in that number outside of Kitty Cott. Although, you know, Kuzman and Niekro had decent careers as well.
And Tappany was a big part of Minnesota history as well.
Yep.
Exactly. What are they going to do if and when Joe Nathan is elected to the Hall of Fame? They got to retire his number.
They'll retire 36.0.
Yeah, ask him for point A. Yeah, point. Yeah, yeah, point one.
Good problem to have.
I'll tell you what, if I was one of those guys that wore number 36, I would make it a point to show up sometime at Target Field when they post that number down the left down the left field line. I would take a picture of it, and I would take it back home and tell everybody, yeah, they retired my number.
Yep, that's what I'd do. Roy, do you have a final thought for us other than that?
My final thought is, as I watch it out my window here and watching it snow, we're only about 11 or 12 weeks from watching the Masters.
Oh, yes. And I think I'm going to be there again. I've been very lucky to cover that. That is the greatest assignment in sports.
But here's the thing.
It's my favorite event. And not the least of which reason is after looking at what I'm looking at for so, you know, for now, it'll be almost 3 months by the time Masters gets here. And the beauty of that place just makes it takes the winter tension away from me.
But here's the thing, though. This week, I always like the first 2 weeks of the new year because you've got the two tournaments in Hawaii. So that kind of whets your appetite for golf.
Yeah, that's given me a little tease. I have to admit, I tuned that in to watch that the beauty of that scenery as well. But I think that's part of the reason why I was watching snow today and having watched a little bit of Hawaii. I just have the Masters on my mind today.
And that's kind of what spring training is for a lot of baseball fans too. It's the symbol of spring because, like, I love watching the golf tournaments in Hawaii, but you know, it's the opposite of our reality. You get to late spring training, you get to the Masters, and you feel like, even if it's a lie, you feel like spring is around the corner.
That's true.
Absolutely. All right, let's wrap it up there. We will talk more on Tuesday at Pizza Luce in Eden Prairie. Thanks to everyone who listens. We'll see you there.